Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong.
Las Culturistas calling.
I sort of have an immediate thing to ask you off the bat.
Okay.
So you know how there's gay culture, there's straight culture, and sometimes there's even some crossover.
I think it's two circles and the it's one tangent little point. Sometimes things make it in there, but it's a really pinhead of a width there, you know?
Yes. It's sort of like there's housewives and there's business women, and sometimes there's a crossover in the middle. You understand?
But just two circles touching, kissing.
Right. Mwah. Exactly. They're just kissing. But then there's Bethany in the middle. And I haven't watched a new reality show, and it's not what I'm asking about today.
Yeah, okay. I hear it's fine, but keep going.
That sounds exactly right. That sounds exactly right, King.
And but that's the story. Before you get into this, that's the story of Bethany, right? Someone that you're like,
fine.
Oh my God, we love her. And then it just sort of like, it took a turn and you're like, okay, now it's averaged out to, the median is fine.
I would call Bethany Frankel effective, but to what end?
Oh.
And that's a rule of culture. Rule of culture number 34. Bethany Frankel.
Effective.
But to what end? You know?
And, you know, now she's kind of become the person that she might have made fun of years ago. Anyway,
oh, big
matter.
Time. When she was selling cookies in aisle four?
In aisle four?
Or was that what she sold? Cookies or whatever? I don't
muffins,
know. I'm sure skinny girl
cupcakes.
Does muffins. Pastries.
Pastries, you see. You understand.
So you understand.
You understand.
So this, you understand. So this, front runner for title limit? You understand.
You understand.
So this is sort of what I wanted to ask you about. So one of the things I think is like very much straight culture, but crosses over with gay culture is the artist Meat Loaf.
Uh-huh.
Because I feel that Meat Loaf is, he's straight culture in that he's a male rock star.
Yeah.
But he's gay culture in that he's drama. And that his song is famously, It's All Come Back to Me Now, which was then covered by the icon Celine Dion. And so we really wouldn't have that song without a Meat Loaf to do it first. So I feel that there's some queer culture in here and straight culture. Now, do you know the song Paradise by the Dashboard Light?
I don't. See, I actually reject the notion that Meat Loaf is, or Paradise Light, or whatever, like, is straight culture, because I was going to do my apologetic thing of, like...
No, yeah, never apologize.
I'm a child of immigrants. I didn't grow up with Meat Loaf, but now I'm just like, no, Meat Loaf is not gay culture, and I actually... But I don't mean to, like...
Yeah.
Undermine your whole thing. I'm sorry. Why am I doing that?
It's okay. It's okay. Even though you're sort of glaring at me and shaking your hand.
No.
It's okay. And the only reason I say, I think I make a valid argument that he is sort of a draggy, like, male rock star.
There's mellow to the drama.
100%. And you actually have to also remember his performance with Catherine McPhee on American Idol season finale when they sang It's All Come Back to Me Now, and he was acting the song very hard, and Catherine, we thought that maybe she'd be killed during the performance because he was sort of acting and singing so hard. So mm-hmm. I do think there's like a lot to him that's worth it, but I just want to say I know every word of the song Paradise by the Dashboard Light, and the other day I was out actually getting drunk with straight people. I was out getting drunk
with
dangerous, and I was out getting drunk with Greta, her husband Abe, Greta's sister Emily, and my dear friend Ian, who is gay but hangs out with straights a bunch as well.
Socially straight.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but like
certainly
interacts with straight people.
Okay.
And the song Paradise by the Dashboard Light came on. And I was like, oh my God, classic song, started singing it at everyone, expecting everyone to sort of join in, and they didn't. And I'm realizing this might be a Jaws thing where it's like only my like Long Island ass knows it because it played at every single Sweet 16.
We did not establish the fact that Jaws is a Long Island specific piece of culture.
But you had said that it was, and we're gonna ask the guest, and I'm sure she'll agree with you because the guest is cultured, and I feel sort of
she's very
conveys
cultured.
Like an intelligence and a like sort of cultural literacy that maybe I don't have. But from my perspective, you said that sort of I know Jaws and didn't know Sound of Music because I'm Long Island trash and not worldly.
I didn't
and
say
you
that.
Being worldly girl.
I did not say you were Long Island trash.
Well,
I don't say stuff like that. You're and your argument?
I'm just saying I didn't realize that not everyone didn't know
It's fine.
Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
Honey, this is actually, no, this is,
what?
No,
go
fine.
Say what you have to say.
This is something.
Oh, here we go.
I don't mean to make this about race.
Oh, here we go.
But this is something that like white people do with the Western culture where it feels like it's universal unto themselves. And so they think that everybody knows Paradise Cove. What was it?
Okay, so everyone, let me just say something. Paradise Cove is literally, it sounds like a hot dating singles reality
show. Yeah, what is
it's
it?
It's not this. It's Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Sort of goes like that. Ain't no doubt about it, we were doubly blessed. Because we were barely 17 and we were barely dressed. I mean, even as I'm singing it, I'm like, this is pathetic straight culture.
We need to ask our guest. She's going to be the tiebreaker.
She's going to be the tiebreaker. But can I say, just because you made it about race, and you did, and you didn't quote-unquote mean to, but you did, everyone at the table, problematic, there are five people at the table, everyone at the table, white. And they didn't know the song. They didn't know the song.
What are you talking about? Oh, at your table at dinner.
I'm just saying, it's like your attempt to sort of make this about race false flops,
because everyone at that table was white and they didn't know it either.
Actually,
when you grew up not a white person in America, you kind of don't go in with the assumption that, oh, people know the shit that I grew up on. That's tea. I got to explain Teresa Tang to some motherfuckers. Not just talking about you. I'm just talking about people in general, society.
Can I tell you something?
And I'm sorry I made it about race. I actually don't apologize because everything is about race.
Well, you already apologized. And you can't take it back. You can't.
Did you listen to Girl in Red? I told you to listen to Girl in Red.
I listened to the entire thing today at the gym.
What did you think, honey?
I thought it was, I think it's really good. You were sort of being like, oh my God, this is brand new. I really loved it.
I think it's so fresh. I'm like, this is like a new person coming into the scene with a really good album and really great songwriting. And she's like giving you like some innovations on like indie pop and pop punk. And like, it's really fun. That's all I said. I did not hype her out to be this new girl.
All I said was I really liked it. I was surprised that you singled it out so hard because it's
an excellent pop album. This is what I did to you with Olivia Rodrigo, and now I'm completely on board. This is you're gonna stand Girl in Red in
I already stand. In fact, I was listening to it today and I was like, absolutely. I said the word absolutely while I was listening to it. All I'm saying is I was surprised that you were so immediately on board with this, because I feel like upon first listen I was just like, oh yeah, I've heard stuff like this before, but it's good.
But she's really threading a lot of things together. She did an interview in Vulture where like her name and like her what her main musical inspiration is, guess who?
Avril Lavigne.
Taylor Swift.
Oh, she's huge, Taylor Swift. She's one of the biggest pop stars.
She goes into this whole thing about how like Red was like an album, like she was like a kid.
The Girl in Red.
When Red came out, and like Red like was fully formative culture that made her say culture was for her. And then Miss Taylor herself even went on stories and said, you gotta listen to this album, Girl in Red.
That's huge. I bet that made the Girl in Red very happy.
Her name is Marie. She's Norwegian. And that's all you need to know. She's Norwegian. And so, of course, the hooks are going to be solid.
So she's made of pop music. It's part of her DNA.
She's drinking the water
You know who's made of comedy gold? It's part of her DNA.
Our guest. Okay. What's the deal with our guest? Our guest co-hosts the podcast.
War Report, mama.
The War Report. She's got two incredible stand-up albums out. I love Stay Eating Cookies. And so you're just out here. So you just out here stating cookies. I was like, this person gets it on a cultural level because she might. I don't want to step on her answer potentially for when we ask her the question.
Of course,
but she is Sesame Street queen.
Oh, major.
And you know someone is good. You know someone is like really really solid when they appreciate Sesame Street culture.
And here's the thing: no one talks about how funny Sesame Street is.
Oh, it's comedy genius.
It's comedy gold. Name another group
legend.
Of legends.
Group of legends.
They are
you.
A group of legends. It's actually Rula Culture number 17.
Sesame Street,
they're a group of legends that got together on the street, on the block, on the Sesame.
And then they said, how about you go in the trash can?
You go over there.
You go over there. You go into the house. You go onto the stoop.
They said, girl, you go in the window. This will be good. You go in the window. Girl, you go in the can.
girl.
Yes. Girl, yes. And your thing is you're going to be so nasty and mean. Nasty, we all know it's mean. A joke. Girl, your thing is you're tall, so you should be the big bird. That's so good for you.
Girl, I love your skin tone. Put on this cape and your thing is going to be like, you love numbers.
Hey, girl, put those cookies down. No, keep eating the cookies. That's perfect. You'll be the cookie monster. Oh my God, we're building a cast.
This is gonna be so good.
Oh, this is going to be so effing good. We can't say because the kids are watching.
It's PBS. But I think we're going to move to HBO someday.
Yeah. Oh my God. I can't wait for the Sesame Streets to get filthy. You know what I mean? Sesame Street After Dark. How rough does it get? I bet rough. You've seen her on the iconic appearance on the goddamn Tonight Show.
Oh my God. You've seen
her on Comedy Central, HBO. You're going to be seeing her everywhere. You're going to be listening to her each week on Thursdays when new episodes of The War Report come out because you're about to fall in love. And that's just that. I don't make the rules at all. Neither does Bowen Yang. He doesn't make the rules.
No, I wish I could, but I don't.
Here's who makes the rules.
Everyone, our guest.
Shalewa Sharp! Come on!
Oh, wow. That was lovely.
Well, listen. Yeah. Hi. Listen.
Hello.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling all right.
Yeah?
I feel good. Yes.
Can you break this tie for us? Have you heard this song, Paradise by the...
Dashboard Light.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I have heard it.
Oh, damn it.
But...
Mm-hmm.
I don't, it is partially it's a touch of a race thing. It is right. a touch of a race thing in the way that like Sweet Caroline is.
Got it. You know Sweet Caroline.
Of course I know Sweet Caroline.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear being sung by people who looked like me. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I honestly didn't hear that until my late 20s. I didn't hear Hotel California until I was about 21, 22.
Right.
I see.
But I heard people complaining about it for many years. And then when I heard it, I was like, oh, this isn't bad. So this is the issue with the meatloaf song is that it's a generational issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess my shock was that I was at a table drinking a boot full of light beer with straight people and they did not know the song. Maybe I need to be more clear about that. That these straight people didn't know this meatloaf song while I was drinking something that was, you know, light and a beer.
I mean, it's definitely because they were too young to have taken that in a way.
Yeah.
And it was kind of picked up in campier circles, which is still surprising that Greta didn't know it. But anyway,
I just think it's so weird.
I feel like she still should have. But yeah, it was a man, the late 70s was a campy time.
We missed that.
We missed that.
It was a campy time so that a meatloaf could appear and you're like, oh, absolutely. Let's let Drama Club dude sing these songs with all of his heart. And tailor made for something that will happen in the future where people will sing these songs in front of other drunk people. This is our guy.
Yes. And see, so, this is what I was talking about. This is the breakdown I knew.
Perfect analysis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good. That's what it is.
But I can understand why it would seem like maybe only people in Long Island had heard it because I think I know it because of Drama Club people, because of chorus people in high school, and then because of karaoke. But then again, I also was around a lot of white folks. That's certainly, I couldn't have turned to my parents and said, hey, have you heard this? That was not, the immediate question would have been, was it on Motown? No?
Right.
Then no, sweetie.
And the answer is decidedly no to that question.
Yeah. Unfortunately
not.
Remind us where you grew up again?
I grew up in Atlanta.
That's right, in
Stone Mountain,
which is like rural, not rural, rural.
No, it's about 10 miles northeast of the city of Atlanta. But the thing with Stone Mountain is it's a mountain. It's like a hill, a big granite hill. That's got Confederate Army heroes etched into the side.
It's a non-rural
Confederate hill?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, people make trips there. And at the time that my family moved there, the Klan was still doing rallies on the top of the mountain. Jesus. But then they switched it for like a family friendly laser show.
And that's actually the ideal replacement. That's the ideal replacement theory is when it comes to white supremacy. Is
yeah, like, is that you wanna go laser show.
Right, make it prettier.
Friendly.
Make it pretty.
Make it prettier.
Friendly for the family. Make it fun for the whole family.
Know, towards the, you can close it out with Elvis singing Dixie. And they would take a laser, and they had the three Confederate Army heroes on horses. And so they would take a laser and outline
the carving. The monuments are still there.
Oh, yeah. They're carved into the side of the mountain, and the mountain's still there, and the lasers would like outline the three of them on horses and then add legs to the horses have them like march off to lose, I guess. And then they'd shoot fireworks and that's Stone Mountain, which of course naturally once some black people moved in experienced wild white flight, and now the population of it is mostly black.
Oh my God.
And Asian. And I think about to go through its own case of gentrification because it's the only place.
The gays are moving in? No. Yeah,
I think they are.
We're the first
closer.
Gentrifiers.
I know.
It's awful.
I know. And so I think, yes, as housing becomes what it is, I think the gays are moving out there. And I'm like, I can't believe I'm watching. I'm watching white flight and then gentrification this area. And it's wild to think of, but I'm also keeping that in mind in case maybe I need to grab a house down there or something.
Well, they probably heard about the light shows, and gays can do interesting things with light shows.
That's
too.
True.
That's they love
true. Lasers, just beaconing. Just come
aesthetics
on.
Aesthetics, huge.
This way.
The
this
only way. Laser I want in Stone Mountain is the one that's going to destroy the statue. That's going to cut through the statues, dear.
I know.
A laser knife, a blade.
But I mean, look, they've switched up the laser show a little bit. They've added Outkast and the Indigo Girls.
You can't.
Outkast and the Indigo Girls. They're like, how do we widen the tent?
Exactly. Well, let's see. Who's from here? That's
coming for the lesbians, too. Wow.
Yeah.
Not even hiding it.
Yeah. What I love is I think the graphic for that is, a lesbian climbing a mountain or hiking while they play Closer to Fine. I can't. It's too much.
It's a good song.
It is. It really is.
They're all good songs. But this is what always bothers me is like when someone's song is being used and you have to listen and you're like, do they know this is happening? Like whenever there's like the RNC. And then Norris is like, hi, yeah, you can't play my song at that. Like, I feel like that's a slippery situation.
That is
very slippery.
That's not what you meant for it. That's not the life you wanted it to have.
No.
I don't know why I misplaced Stone Mountain. Well, I think it's because they named a 30 Rock episode Stone Mountain where Kenneth goes back and it's supposed to be rural. And I think they named it that because Donald Glover was on the staff at the time and wrote.
He is from Stone Mountain. He went to I didn't know his Stone Mountain experience was 10 years after mine, but it was almost exactly alike in that, you go to a school, there are a lot of white kids there. And then I think he went to a performing arts high school. And my sister went to that performing arts high school years before. And so when I heard him tell his story, I was like, that's my life he's talking about.
Uh-huh.
But it happens when you're one of four. And he probably still had more white people in his orbit than I did in mine. But
they're hard to
hard
avoid.
To avoid. They're everywhere.
Hard to avoid.
Guys.
I leave the chat.
Bye, Matt. No, Matt feels very alienated. But Shalewa, you and I have had very, what I would consider, and it's completely my fault. I remember I've had a conversation with you about the layout of Atlanta. And I was like, my sister lives there. And you're like, oh yeah, where? And I was like, Dunwoody. And I think I saw the light leave your eyes.
No, that couldn't have been. Dunwoody's nice.
It is nice.
Great.
It's lovely.
It still counts. The thing is,
it still counts.
Yeah. When you say Metro Atlanta, you really mean the top third of the state of Georgia at this point. Like, it's so big. It's so spread out. It's a lot like L.A. It's not as spread out as L.A., but the vibes are similar.
There are no borders. Yeah.
Yeah. In L.A., I still feel like there's still a vibe where it feels like someone was murdered in every other house. But like in Atlanta, you get an idea as to why. Whereas in L.A., you're not really sure.
Oh, my God.
You know?
You're not out in L.A. now, are you?
I'm in Brooklyn.
I thought.
Yeah.
It's God. I just feel like you were always like whenever we were having because, by the way, we should just say, get ready for the end of this episode when Shalewa does the I Don't Think So Honey, because you are one of the best. I don't think
one
so
of
honey
the best
ers.
To do it.
And I feel like whenever I had to book a show, I always thought of you because I fucking love you. You're so funny. And I just feel like
you're
the best. And you did. Was Shalewa on Team Matt or Team Bowen in the Coach War?
I think she was on my team. Right? Do you remember?
I think so.
Uh-huh.
Do you have your team
blue?
Bowen
that was
pin?
Blue.
That was blue. Yes, I was blue.
Yeah. I do. Yep, that was it.
We've been talking a lot about reviving that as a live show format. Perhaps, because it's time that Bowen and I finally face off again once and for all.
Yeah, I think so. I think the streets need that. Absolutely. The streets need that.
Wait, speaking of the streets, the Sesame Street of it all.
Yes.
Who is the biggest legend?
Who?
You're a cookie. No, we know that she's a Cookie Monster head.
I do like Cookie Monster. It's tough because, you know, they're all my babies.
Right.
They all taught me how to read. I like Snuffy.
Snuffle.
And that he just kind of somehow skirts in and out.
Yeah, and people are never really questioning appropriately what he is.
What's happening? You know, he brings
Why
his little sister sometimes. And now I remember when he was just Big Bird's friend and no one else saw him.
There was
a time that he was only Big Bird's and they thought Big Bird was making him up. And so Snuffy would show up. They'd hang out. Someone would walk by. Big Bird would go, oh, wait, I'm going to go grab, you know, Gordon, and then try to get Gordon to come back. And when he did, Snuffy had to go somewhere. And so everyone's like, okay, Big Bird. And so that was very frustrating.
My gosh. So there was a full arc for a long time where they were like, Big Bird, you're going crazy. What you see, no one else can see.
Yeah. For like, I think their first like 10 years that they were on, it was like he was an imaginary friend. And then they made it so that everyone did eventually meet Snuffleupagus, right?
Yes. He became corporal.
There's a book that's like an oral history of Sesame Street, and I went to a reading that the author did, take questions, and I asked how did that switch happen where everyone met him and why?
Good question.
Why?
And it must be asked.
And the author explained to me that around the time that they decided to make that switch was when children were being abducted. And so they wanted kids to feel like adults would believe them.
Smart.
So they made it so that people could now believe Big Bird because they met Snuffleupagus.
Interesting.
And I was,
that's so fascinating.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, that's deep. That is not what I was expecting.
That really, really, really kind of crazy that was the justification.
Yeah, that they had to think that. But I'm glad they did, because I definitely was a child going nuts every time they never got around to meeting Snuffy, just screaming at the TV. Like, he's right there.
And he's simply huge.
He's a big hairy elephant. Come on. And my dad going like, Shalewa, it's okay. Like,
yeah.
this isn't real. What do you mean it's not real? And he's like, okay, you have a very good point. This is real to you.
Yeah. Are we ready to call Snuffleupagus a woolly mammoth? Are we sort of ready to say that?
Hairy
he's
elephant.
Not tusked. Yeah, he's a hairy elephant.
Yeah, he's just a hairy elephant.
It's okay.
It's okay. Yeah.
And that's
okay.
You don't have to be categorized differently because you're a hairy elephant.
Yeah.
Still
that's
an elephant.
That's so true.
Here's another thing. This is a very deep cut. If there are any other Sesame Street people out there, they will know.
I'm sure.
Okay. So there's a lot of talk of Bert and Ernie as a couple.
Right.
Right. I don't think they're a couple.
Okay.
I'm willing to believe that they aren't. Everyone was very upset when the creator was, well, no, sorry, go.
Yeah. I think they're just friends and roommates. Like that's the vibe I get from them.
Yes.
But there are a couple of construction guys named Biff and Sully.
Yeah.
And
okay, do you mind if I Google?
No, go right ahead.
You think they're gay?
I think they're the couple.
Yeah.
Because one of them speaks for both of them.
Yes.
Interesting.
And I'm like, look at that trust. Look at that trust.
Oh my God. And it's not conflict. It's not conflict based. Yeah.
No, it's just, you know, I forget which one talks, like Biff trusts Sully to, you know what I mean? And when they don't agree, it just takes a look. And then the other one's like, all right, I hear you. And then they,
yeah,
I that's the couple. I think that's really the couple we should be paying attention to.
Fascinating to think about. You think that it's not that there's no gay representation on Sesame Street. It's right. Just that we're not popularly looking in the right place.
Right, right.
And it's queerer for the queer representation to be sort of tucked away, to be in its own pocket.
Right, yes. Right. I think it's too obvious. It's what people want because then they feel comfortable just loading it all on Bert and Ernie. It's got to be them, right?
Right, because they're well dressed. They sort of, you know, they have the sort of very straightforward ones, tall ones, small, that whole thing. And also, you're saying these two, the Biff and Sully, these are construction workers?
Yes, I'm looking at them now. You should Google them.
They're in a mask job, and so therefore, you know, no one's looking at them like gay.
Blue collar. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
They're looking at the wasps of the street.
It's a class issue. It's a class issue.
It is. It is. But I mean, I feel like if you really see how they interact with each other and with others, you'll see the love. You'll see where how it's held together.
Shalewa, this
is amazing.
This is the nuance that everybody needs. I'm not even kidding because I'm looking at Biff and Sully and I immediately have flashbacks. I've seen them together.
Mm-hmm.
It is a beautiful relationship, however you want to characterize it. Biff is the chatty bottom, Sully is the chill top. It actually is functional. This is the analogy that Matt and I have been loving lately that a lot of people have been using in terms of, you know, couplehood, coupledom, flower gardener. One's the flower, one's the gardener.
Oh, that's nice.
You're not getting that with Bert and Ernie. Maybe you're like, oh, well, Ernie's the gardener and Bert's the flower. But I don't think that applies.
Yeah.
What I would say is that I don't think that Bert and Ernie are a gay couple, but I think they've jacked off together. That's what I'm willing to say is that I think it's gotten to a especially during quarantine. I'm sure something went down with Bert and Ernie during quarantine. So
absolutely.
I'm willing to say maybe they're not in a committed relationship, but I think things have gotten to the point where we've explored it, especially after they hear it talked about so much
in the
media.
News.
It's that thing of when it gets implanted in your own head. It's like when people are like, will they, won't they, about celebrities? And then they're like, no. But then it's like, you're going to think about it.
You have to. I mean, eventually, you know, David and Maddie got together on Moonlighting. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
I think this is such an eye roll, maybe, but I think there's some movie pitch here where I've always wanted to do something with puppets, but like some facsimile of Bert and Ernie in the movie world.
Mm-hmm.
Are roommates. It's completely platonic. Their whole lives, decades, they've been platonic. And then it's mixed in with the real world. And then they hear in the news media that the creator says that they were meant to be gay, but then the workshop says that they aren't. And so they're caught in between these two truths about themselves. And then what do they do? And do they fall in love? Do they not?
Right. How do they truly feel? You know?
Yeah.
But that's good.
Yeah. I think that's really good. Should we all do it? I'm happy to drive. I'm happy to have us all make it equally distributed work-wise.
I'm into it. I really do like that.
I think that's good.
The idea of them having to think for themselves because they didn't have to before because they were told by the person who made them and by the workshop what to think.
Exactly.
Because they didn't actually have brains.
Right. But now.
That part.
Right.
can I just say, like, I think that because there was an understanding at the top that you love Cookie, I don't want to take the opportunity from you to talk about Cookie, because I actually am on record on this podcast as Cookie being my favorite Sesame Street character. Because I believe that Cookie is unapologetic about what he wants.
Absolutely.
Cookie, you know exactly what he wants, and he wants Cookie. And I think that that is important, and I think it's about taking space. I think it's about urgency, and I think it's about showing up every day and knowing your purpose. And I also think there's a little bit there about, you know, impulse control, because sometimes it gets a little crazy when Cookie isn't allowed to have Cookie. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
But Cookie's good at acknowledging it. Mm-hmm. He's usually pretty good at just being like, you know how I am, Cookie.
It's about emotional management. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I actually really admired that time when Cookie was trying out veggies.
I remember that. Yes. He was trying out a lot. He was trying out veggies and he was trying out wrap. And that's tough, because he was rapping about vegetables. And that's tough. That was a lot to take in. He was going in a Run DMC.
Sure.
Mode, right. Which is right. Truly understandable. I mean, that's, but experimentation, right?
You gotta do it.
You have to.
Keeping an open mind for it, absolutely. But Cookie is also someone who has really stood the test of time, appeals to all sectors in every way. There's no one who doesn't love Cookie.
Sometimes it jars me a little bit, but I'm kind of into the confidence of Grover, the quiet Grover confidence, like
the bravery.
He's very much whatever he's throwing himself into. He's just like, I mean, I'm the cutest monster here. Let's do this.
He really is. He's the best looking monster to me.
You know, Grover. What's interesting? I've taken it upon myself to Google. People were polled about who the favorite Sesame Street characters were. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, it's kind of a runaway. Let's just say, this is like a small sampling, but of 100 people polled, Cookie Monster was by far number one, followed right on his heels is Elmo. And then Elmo was trailed by Big Bird, who's trailed by Oscar the Grouch, who's trailed by Grover. And then it's kind of like a collection of everyone else. But Cookie really runs away with it, and followed by Elmo.
That definitely makes me feel good, because Elmo is a struggle for me. Elmo's a real struggle.
Talk about that.
When he appeared, it was a sea change for Sesame Street, I feel like.
Right.
He showed up around the time that helicopter parents showed up. Do you know what I mean? And a lot of activities after school showing up, and just a lot of Elmo showing up being like 3 or 4 and speaking about himself in the third person really bothered me.
He required a lot of attention.
It was too much. He felt a little selfish, and I'm like, all right, that's how kids are. But then I remembered he's not going to grow out of it. None of them do. But I don't know what the lesson is to learn from that. And it just, I don't know. It's sometimes he took over. He got Elmo's world in no time. And I don't know if that's just really, you know, industry jealousy on my part of just, I want to be able to come in and take over a quarter of your show.
It stuck out to me as a child too, growing up when Elmo's world first came around. I was like, who does this monster think he is?
Exactly.
Child. And not to get show busy even further, but Elmo constantly playing to camera, and it's actually annoying.
Constantly.
Checking in with camera, like, what should I do? It's like, just do it. You're spiking. You're looking at the camera. Stop. Live your life.
I'm not a part of this. I'm a kid. I can't make decisions for you. You have to make decisions for yourself. I'm here to watch it unfold. I'm not here to engage. I'm 3.
You're gonna do what you want. You're gonna do what you want, Elmo. And then if it's not what you should have done, I guess it's a lesson. I guess.
Right. Yeah. Right. And also, don't forget. I mean, let's not forget. One of the most lethal toys ever created.
I mean,
did it actually hurt kids?
It was shaking, and the kids were shaking with it.
Oh,
shaking
right.
And quaking.
Okay. I forgot
and
about
also
this.
The parents were fighting each other. So, you know, I mean, the violence came from on high all the way down.
Have you seen this first? Have any of you seen this firsthand? Like a child being so deeply, pathologically obsessed with Tickle Me Elmo that if you took it away from them,
Elmo, yes,
the parents would fight. The parents would actually have a meltdown in front of in front of me. Yeah. And be like, oh no. This is different. And actually, Elmo is bringing a cursed energy into this space.
Yeah, yeah. It's too much. It's too much too soon with Elmo. Yeah. It's too much too soon. And I mean, I'm not saying he's going to spiral, but you know, there are a lot of young Muppets just around the corner. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Coming up, it's going to be Showgirls.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
As soon as that Nomi Muppet comes rolling through, it's a wrap.
You're going down the stairs, baby. Yep. See ya in physical therapy, Elmo.
This title of ep is Nomi Malone Muppet.
Nomi Malone Muppet.
Malone Muppet.
That Nomi Malone Muppet. Honestly, when that was out, when the Tickle Me Elmo was out, I remember it was on local news. It was like, you won't believe the stampede, like 18 injured in Tickle Me Elmo, like early release. It was like, and then there was that culture when we were little of like, remember every Christmas there'd be that one toy. Like it was, if it wasn't Tickle Me Elmo, it was the Furby.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Or it was like, and then I remember when there was like the video game console wars, like when PS2 came out. Now it's like still happening. I guess I'm not as keyed into it, but I remember like feeling like a responsibility as a child almost to not ask for that toy.
Yeah, just to evade
danger. Yes.
You don't want them out there in the streets fighting.
No.
I mean, you get that they love you, but you don't. It doesn't have to come to fisticuffs. It doesn't.
I trust my mother with a lot of things. I don't trust her to be throwing hands for toys.
No, not at all. When I was a kid, the big thing were adoption dolls by Xavier Roberts in Atlanta, and he sold them, and they became Cabbage Patch dolls.
I see.
So this was just before
they had Cabbage an origin Patch. Story.
Yeah, there's a hospital, Babyland General, in North Georgia, where you can go and watch Cabbage Patch dolls being born from the cabbage patch. You can watch them being plucked from a cabbage patch.
Were the Cabbage Patch kids real cabbage?
They came from a field, and there are people who were hired. They had on scrubs. You could go and they'd hold up the doll, and then you adopted one of those.
This is sick. Like,
until the pandemic, this place was open and open for business. And so the whole thing was that you could get Xavier Roberts, I guess he signed the butt of every doll or whatever that was made. And
like that.
And so before they became Cabbage Patch dolls and were made widely, they were like locally in Atlanta. And when I say these women were, it knocked down drag outs every night, a body count every night on the news for these adoption dolls. And my mother at the time was just like, I didn't even want an adoption doll. But she was like, well, I mean, my baby gets adoption dolls. So she knew a woman who could make them.
Oh, no. So, you don't want that, though.
So she had homemade adoption dolls made for me and my sister, which she named for us because you have to fill out paperwork because they've been adopted.
Right.
And she named them with our middle names, and then had little baby dolls made for those dolls. Like it was a whole, she was giving us a whole family. And I was like, I truly just wanted books. Like I love you. But yeah, I hope you didn't fight someone for this. And she's like, no, I know a woman. You know.
I didn't fight someone. I killed someone. I took someone's life for this. This is a blood cabbage patch doll.
Yay. Oh. Yeah.
So it made no difference to you whether or not it was an authentic Xavier
not
Roberts
at all.
Adoption.
Not at all. Okay. Nope, it didn't. And actually that has served me well because I'm not big into name brands. And
I admire that so much.
So luckily, And I think it starts with that adoption doll.
I think it does. I think it starts with this toy culture where it's like, you gotta get it. You gotta get the hot new thing. And I think that's like, I've been like fully brainwormed by that logic. And like, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also for, again, something that's not that good, like Tickle Me Elmo, it's like, you know what it's going to do.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the Furby where it was like, you know, this Furby could, you kind of get it with the Tamagotchi too, the Furby, these things that were popular in the 90s that like, you were like, oh, well, it's going to develop a little bit of a personality. There's going to be a sense of responsibility. It's like, you get that you can engage with it. The Tickle Me Elmo, you tickle it, it shakes. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's all it. But you know, he's a simple creature after all. Like that basically, you know, he was just throwing anything. What if I just laughed a little? Yeah, I imagine Elmo with a cigar, like in a conference room, coming up with ideas on how to, you know, get these kids money. And
well, he's like, he's meeting with HBO now. He's like, I want to fuck on camera. He's like, Elmo's like, I want to fuck on camera, and I want this show to be, I want this show to be raw and real.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know. We were thinking it was maybe a show where like you go to the water park, like, you know, you feel sad because you drop an ice cream cone. He's like, no, I want to fuck, and I want it to be guys, girls. He's like, I want to show everyone who the Elmo really is. And they're like, okay, maybe we'll circle back.
I want to do key bumps, no props, the real thing.
He's like, Elmo's like, have you heard of the K special?
The K special?
Man, but what is Elmo like high? Like, what is...
Oh.
What is
Chatterbox!
What is a tweaking Elmo? Do we want that? I want that doll. Give me that doll.
This is another show. We're in development on this
really
podcast
are.
Today.
Yeah.
We're truly pumping out the
hits. We really are. Oh my goodness, I'm taking
there
notes.
Is something generative about like Jim Henson. Anything Jim Henson, you're like, there are so many, it is so like, it inspires so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your relationship with Jim Henson, or are you specifically Sesame Street?
I like Jim Henson stuff. I definitely love the Muppet Show and things related
Incredible.
To that. You know, I mean, because that was just like weird vaudeville for children.
Yeah.
So
amazing sketch.
Yes. So that's just a lot of how I figured out like comic timing. And
right.
That, you know, I'm like, yeah, I love you know, literally Waka Waka. Like as a child. Yeah.
Waka Waka
Waka Waka
every
Waka
time.
Child. Yeah, like all of that. Just the corniest jokes.
It's a classic.
And,
there was nothing funnier than when Miss Piggy would say, hi-ya! When she would say hi-ya, you were on the floor every time. Name another legend. Miss Piggy was it before it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And also, really, one of the most iconic divas. Like, they talk about divas. No, you have to talk about Miss Piggy.
Yeah. Yeah, and fully accepting of, like, just the various looks. The looks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you knew what era we're talking about when she had like the Barbara Streisand perm. You know,
she'd be
that
in
was
Bob Mackie.
Yeah,
I was going to say Bob Mackie. Yes.
Yeah,
that woman would be in Bob Mackie garments.
I know. It's wild. It's wild.
A puppet.
Things that we, the general public, would have to like pay thousands of dollars to even look at in person. Miss Piggy was draped in it.
Yeah.
Swimming
her whole,
in it.
Her whole vibe was a fainting couch. Her whole vibe was just a fainting couch.
It was Mariah before Mariah.
Absolutely.
Oh, the influence there is immense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But there's something meaningful here. Yes, absolutely. But there's something meaningful here where it's like, if you were to like walk Miss Piggy down the runway at a fashion show for like Gucci or like Christian Cowan, like it would not be ironic. It would not be like, oh, haha, a puppet. It'd be like, oh my God, that's Miss Piggy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, it would.
Victoria Beckham wouldn't crack a smile. She'd be like, I like the hem on that. If Miss Piggy was walking down, she was like, that's really interesting. We're going to get six of those.
Exactly. You may get the, you know, with Posh, you may see that she's thinking about a smirk. And that's really...
And that's it.
That's the highest praise you can get.
100%.
the thought of maybe a smirk.
She's like, I like the humor of having Miss Piggy on the runway. But most importantly, I liked the way she was wearing the clothes and the clothes weren't wearing her. That's really the vibe.
It's a very good accent. Thank you so much, King. From you,
the accent king. Sketch legend. Oh my God.
Shut the fuck up.
For your consideration.
Wait, we have to ask Shalewa because I do think this is, I don't want to foist onto you the Sesame Street because I'm sure this happens very often with people. As I'm sure they like are begging you to talk about Sesame Street.
Oh.
But
they're begging. They're clamoring.
Of course they would be.
I mean, I love it. I do love it. But
we're gonna ask you, what is the culture that made you say culture is for you? That made you say culture is for me? The formative culture, pop culture, whether it was music, books, film, television. It can be Sesame Street again. We can keep going down this path. It can be other things.
This was a tough one. I thought about this a lot because I knew it would be a music video because music videos are so important, right?
Yes.
So it was hard. I narrowed it down to two music videos, and I didn't want to do obvious choices. I wanted to think of ones that really did like hit me in some way.
Yeah, you got to zig when you're supposed to zag.
Right.
You understand.
And so basically, there are two music videos, and I just revisited them to make sure I'm not going crazy, and I'm not. They really do kind of have a hold on me. The first one is, for aesthetic reasons, the Cruel Summer video by Bananarama.
Oh my God.
Oh, right.
The whole thing I've been trying to do that for so long. And I think I'm there. But it's,
you know, yeah, I mean, so are you an overalls queen?
I'm not yet an overalls queen, but the where the pants fall. Like they're a short pant with a white sock and like a sensible shoe, a sensible flat. They're kind of pleated, so they're kind of baggy. Just that whole 80s.
It's roomy, yeah.
It's kind of, you know, shirts are disheveled. Hair is a mess, but there's a red lip.
Right.
And you're just constantly futzing with it. You can't.
Intentional casual.
Yes. You can't dance, but you can walk to the beat down the street. That's me.
Yeah.
That is me. Absolutely.
Walking to the beat down the street to the Brooklyn Bridge Park pier.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
To look at the skyline.
It's absolutely because before that I was super into like Cyndi Lauper and Boy George and David Lee Roth from Van Halen. You know, all the classics. All the
camp.
Things. All the
a
things.
Lot of camp there.
A lot of camp. But I knew that those looks weren't sustainable.
Sure.
You know,
like, yeah, so much face washing, you know, like really the skincare of it all is going to become an issue.
Exactly. But what they were doing, I was like, I can do that's doable. And you can you can throw some leg warmers in there. I'm big on leg warmers. So so I definitely was just like, this is my look.
Well, this is back. This whole aesthetic is back.
It is back.
And, in fact, Shalewa, last week on the podcast during the recording, was wearing a jumpsuit.
Wore a jumpsuit.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And it's because I'm fully re-soaking back into this aesthetic that you're discussing. Mm-hmm. And will we call this a drop crotch, I guess?
Where it's just, how low what is the crotch?
I mean, in the images I'm looking at, like, these crotches are
talking about the video.
We're talking about the video.
Oh, yeah. No. They're just a baggy pleated pant, I think.
They're just baggy.
They're just baggy, but they still cinch a little at the bottom. It's a whole thing. I showed it to my, I showed a clip of it to my roommate earlier. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I think this video might be kind of why I am what I am, and I just kind of sent him a clip, and he immediately was like, oh yeah, look at where those pants fall, like that's absolutely right.
And he knew his eye went to the pants immediately.
And he's also like considerably younger than me, so he didn't grow up with Cruel Summer.
Sure,
it was the
sure.
first time he was really seeing it, and he was like, oh yeah, that's absolutely your essence. So I feel like I was nailing that.
We love yeah. that. Yeah. It's so interesting too, like to think of baggy. I just said baggy clothes are back in. And then the baggy queen herself this week, Billie Eilish, was like, just kidding. I'm in lingerie now. So again, she zigged when she zagged.
No, she's doing exactly what she's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
She's right. She's 19. She's mm-hmm. willing to let you see cleavage. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember.
And a tattoo.
And it's clockwork. At every white girl or anyone with any proximity to white girls growing up, you have to make that decision. Are you Betty Page? Are you Marilyn Monroe? So
interesting.
So she's making that decision. She's doing that. And then as soon as you hit 19, not 18, because 18, yeah, no. Well, at 18, if you've been a baggy person, like your teen mm-hmm. years, and you're a woman and you've been wearing stuff over your chest is probably big and you don't mm-hmm. want anyone to see you're wearing big clothes. At 19 is when you're like, no, I'm ready. I think I'm ready. So she's, I mean,
you're so right. So,
she's on track.
She's yeah. absolutely on track. When I saw the cover of British Vogue, I was like, yep, mm-hmm. that's absolutely. I flash back to me in a cat suit with a see-through baby doll dress at 19.
Yes. Woo!
When before I was dressing like, you know, like Bananarama. Yeah.
And probably saying, I'll never dress like that.
Never yep, look like that.
Similarly
Not
to what
all.
Billie had been saying.
This is yeah. so interesting. And I will say, just for the sake of this point, mm-hmm. not in like a gross way, like big naturals.
Big mm-hmm. naturals.
She's got big naturals.
Yep. Absolutely.
She's va va voom.
Yeah.
She's va va voom.
So she's going to move awkwardly with them for a little while. She's just going to be like, I mean, I guess they're out now. I don't know what to do. And she hasn't figured out. She's got the look in that, you know, she's got everything made for her. But she still doesn't know yet what to do with her face. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she's still.
I think I know what you mean.
So
yeah.
she's still kind of like sullen youth while giving you bombshell from the neck down, but sullen youth. And it's like, I'm like, man, once you get all that together, that's going to unlock another thing for you. I hope you will be ready for it. But I see you fumbling with the keys right now. I see.
This is perfect.
I see yeah. you and I can't even like. I know what's going to happen. There are going to be a gajillion think pieces about is she even ready to do this and blah, blah, blah. And right, I'm like, right. yeah, didn't we already go through this? Like with almost
times.
Every, when are we going to understand that when a girl hits like 19, 20 and she starts to do these things, it's not an acting out. Like it's part of the journey.
The development.
It's part of the development. Yeah. This is absolutely how this should go. And we should treat it with grace and not like shock. Like, oh my God, how dare she put on a tight t-shirt? No, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and also I don't like the way people are treating her now where it's like, oh, she said she'd never do this. She's selling out. Like now what is the message? It's like, you know what? Like shut up. Please. Also, let women dress however they fucking want to dress.
Absolutely.
How about that?
Yeah. How did we not see this coming? She had the nails on for 2 years. She's been telling us. All those t-shirts were like expensive ass t-shirts. Those were cheap t-shirts. Yeah, she was going to show up in a corset. Come on, bruh.
She was wearing like the Gucci and the Off-White and everything. Yeah. Like she knows fashion. She understands fashion.
Absolutely.
It's not that she doesn't know what she's doing. It's that she's moving into this new mm-hmm. sartorial thing edit where now she's like unveiling something that we have not seen of her yet. And I think it's very exciting. But actually, I think the blonde bombshell look, but still like the sullen face is actually an intentional sort
choice.
Choice that she's mixing. And it's like, oh, because Matt and I were at Universal Studios last week when she like came out with like, you know, the album art and the trailer mm-hmm. for the single and all that. And we were like, wow, like this is kind of something we have seen but haven't before. And then the British Vogue cover, I was just like, oh my God, like this is very calculated. I don't mean that in the pejorative. I mean, it's very thought out.
Right.
It's intentional.
She's definitely moving it with intention with it. And I was watching where she answers questions for Vogue. And so mm-hmm. she's sitting on a couch. It's perfect, everything. And then they show like a celebrity asking her a question. And then her face so alive and animated. And it's just like, I mean, that's in there. That's in there too.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
So, I mean, when she gets to screwball comedy dame, you know what I mean? When she's taking...
She's a superstar. She's got it.
I love her.
I think she's capable of a lot. And she also has... I think that she has such a gravity, and she's always had such a gravity since the beginning, that I think... That was, I think, why when we saw the photo of what her new aesthetic was for this album cycle, we actually laughed because we thought, oh, this is so smart. Like the way that she was like now blonde and she turned to camera, looked dead in the eye of the camera and was like basically saying fuck you with her eyes. Like I kind of thought, oh, maybe is this a comment? Like I don't actually want to be in this, but I am. I think we need to hear more of the album to find out if there's if there's actually something going on. It could be anything. I still think the jury's out on what is being said.
I think that they had just that very short audio of the title track of the album, Happier Than Ever, where it's like when
Happier Than Ever,
when I'm not with you or something, I'm happier than ever. And very like it's very Lynchian. It's very Lynchian.
It is. Yes. That's perfect.
It's very Lynch. And so I was immediately just like, what I need to hear the rest of that song, because that's a banger, I can tell already. So like I hope that's where, I mean, if she wants to do torch songs, she could go that way. She could go full on pop. She can keep murmuring into a mic, whichever one she wants to do, and it'll all still make sense. But I mean, I can't wait to see what is next. But it also is just like, yep, we're right on schedule. We're trucking along. Let's, you know, let's not try to derail her with thoughts of like, how could she? Of course she could. Right. We all do. This is happening in every neighborhood.
Yeah.
In every neighborhood, there is some 19-year-old who's just like, I'm going to get the longer acrylics. Do you know, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I'm going to branch out in some way. I'm going to wear a crop top. It's happening to all women of all sizes too. So don't think that it's not. Everybody is doing something where they're just they're trying to switch it up, because it is a time of extreme change, you know, until the Saturn returns or whatever. But
But your comment about her face too, like it's all there. Like you're so right. I mean, this is such a weird thing to reference, but there she loves The Office, as we know, and there's a video of Rainn Wilson like meeting her, and she is so genuinely excited and delighted and surprised that you're like, oh, so like that's like the essence of her in some way, where she's just like actually like a very animated person, and she's funny, and she's got jokes, and she just does her bits, and you're like, okay, so this is like a very manicured facade.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And it's genius. And it's genius.
Yeah.
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 I watched that documentary that was on.
I still have it.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. There's a scene where she meets Justin Bieber, and the way that she plays it was very touching. It was very touching. It was hilarious, but also very touching. But also, like, what do you do in that? What do you do in that regard? Like, when you meet someone huge, you know, you just however you want to act, and you try to play it cool, but then you can't anymore, or you know.
Yeah.
So,
like, lose all faculty, and how do you? If you know you're losing all faculty on the inside, how is that being externalized?
Yes. How do you pull it together, and then how do you just let it go? And you see her do both of those things. So it's really that part was like maybe my favorite part, just like seeing someone trying to keep it together and then also losing it, and like just, you know, I'm like, that is the dichotomy, though, isn't it?
Because I watched a little bit of it, and I not because I didn't like it, just because I only got to see a little bit of it. But I thought one thing, the number one thing I got from it was she's a kid.
Yeah.
Like she's young. And I think that there is like a lot of depth there, and a lot of gravity there, and a lot of genius there, you might even say. But she also, like, her personality is she is a kid, or she was a kid when this was filmed. And so that to me was not, it's almost weird to say that was the most surprising revelation from it, because she is young, like literally on paper, she's a young person.
Right.
But she has a kid, youthful vibe. Right. And I thought that really read, that really came through. I want to know what was the second music video that you had on deck?
The second music video is Self-Control by Laura Branigan.
Okay. I'm not familiar.
You might have to educate us.
Okay. So Laura Branigan had a big hit song in the 80s called Gloria. And Yeah, that one. And then her follow-up was a song called Self-Control, which I think was like a cover of like an Italian pop song, I believe. Okay. But it's just about, it's just your basic song about a dude who makes you kind of lose your control when he's around and all that stuff. But it's also about, you know, being out at night and mystery and this guy, and you just can't control yourself when you see him. So the video is kind of along those lines as well. And it's literally what I thought being an adult would be like. So it's just you get dressed up in your off the shoulder sweater dress, and you walk the streets of New York, which are clearly inside, and and you encounter a guy with a full mask on,
a Jabberwocky mask. I'm seeing on Google.
Yes. And you then follow him to a underground like orgy of some sort, and everybody's in unitards, which I also thought would play a very big part in my life. I thought dance clothing was going to be the reason for the scene. That's what all adults were doing. And and you know, you end up hooking up with this man of mystery, and it's just very seamy, and you end up in, I guess, maybe a New York apartment with lots of drop cloths everywhere. And then the guy has his way with you, and then he disappears into the night, and you just think fondly of it, and then you do it all over again. And I thought that's what being an adult was like, and then I probably forgot about it. And then I spent a lot of my 20s and 30s doing just that. Like dressing up and going out dancing many times a week. And then, you know, just like in underground clubs, and just like, yeah, we're doing it. We're adults. Let's, you know, and it's a wild video. It's by 80s. You know what I mean? Just, I really thought that's what, and it had such an effect on me. Mm-hmm. I was just like, yeah, this is absolutely what being an adult is like.
I have a couple questions.
Yes.
These are incredible answers. These are incredible answers to the question, by the way. But okay, so in your 20s, when you were going out, was there some background context to what you were doing where you were like, I am doing this and it's fulfilling this desire and this fantasy that I've had since I was a child, where I'm doing self-control? Or Was that fair to say or no?
The realization came
later. It was implanted,
but it was not conscious. Gotcha.
Yes, exactly. Because I started going out like while I was still in high school. I would go, you know, out to clubs where you're supposed to be this age and you're under that age, but you look cool.
Tell us all this time.
You know how it is. You look, you're wearing all of the black necessary. Come on in. Come on in. You're fine. And so I definitely
you're wearing all of the blackness.
And so you just
the bouncer
keep
sees
going.
You dressing the code.
Right. Yeah, you know what's up. And that's tough, because when I was going out, like as a teenager, a very strict cool person dress code were black and white striped stockings.
That's gonna be a tough one.
That was tough, but it was necessary. Preferably thigh highs if you had them. You know what I mean? It was It was a tough time. We all thought we were Susie. We thought we were Susie and or the Banshees. You know what I mean? We all were The Cure. We all were Depeche Mode. We knew nothing. And so I just continued to do that. And at some point, I just remember seeing like people writhing around on the floor. Like I'm standing up against the wall and I'm watching people dance in the club. And I'm like, wow, I've been doing this a long time, you know, out here dancing and also watching people dance. This is kind of wild that this has been my life, that I really look forward to this. Like And then
it is nice though. Sorry.
It is nice. And I miss it. And I'm
deeply.
I do. And I would like to get back to it. But I moved to New York from Atlanta, and I never even I just came here and immediately started doing comedy. Like, the reason you moved was comedy, so do that. And then I was starting to get to a point where I was like, I should try to see where people go and, you know, nod their heads to hip hop or something.
Right.
And then, you know, the whole place shut down. And I was like, okay, sorry, I had that thought. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry. I shut
May
it down.
May 17th.
I know, May 17th. It's all back.
It might be a fun summer.
It might
so
be.
So they say.
Go to an outdoor lot or something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
there are safe ways to do
you
it.
You can find
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
they're out there.
It's out there.
My second question really, and I think you can answer this very quickly, for both Cruel Summer and Self Control, did the music really matter, or was it just purely about the storytelling and the aesthetics of the videos?
Both of them are bangers, but I think for Cruel Summer, it was the aesthetic, and Self Control, it was both. Because Self Control is a banger. It really goes hard. Uh-huh. It does. Uh-huh. So
I will say the aesthetic from Self Control that I actually think is still a look, but I know no one is doing it, mm-hmm. is an off-the-shoulder sweater.
Oh my God.
I
love it.
I think that is glam. Yes. That is something from like the 80s, I guess early 90s, that mm-hmm. I actually think is stunning, is just a one-shoulder moment and like a sort of, what would you call this? Like an exaggerated turtleneck. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like where it's like folded down. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think
the exposed shoulder, one exposed shoulder, I am about it. I'm about that.
I think it is still like a slightly classy thing to do. I'm like, it's
well,
versatile.
People would be like, ooh, retro, but I don't want them to say that.
It's not
retro.
It's timeless. It's timeless.
Okay.
It belies like an ease with all surroundings. Like, I'm so chill at this, you know, at this party, at this wedding, at this
most confident award.
I'll just show you a shoulder and it means nothing, you know. This is fleece or this is like complete glitter. It doesn't matter. I'm so chill.
And it's clavicle culture. It's clavicle culture. You know what I mean? Clav culture.
Décolleté.
Honestly, it is that. And I used to, you know, I used to always like be, because I don't know, maybe this is like a...
I think we all have good clavicles in this room.
But I used to not like that I had a pronounced clavicle. And then when I got into my 20s and like whenever Bowen and I, when I would do a drag thing, like, which would happen every now and then, like, remember Night Soap? We wore those, like, we were wearing those, like, off the shoulder things because we were wealthy women in the 80s.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it was Dynasty was the reference. And so I was looking at my clavicle and I was like, oh my God, this is the Carrington Colby clavicle. This is exactly
Colby
right.
Dexter.
This is period.
Yes.
This is a period clavicle. This is exactly right. And now I can move on with my life.
It's so languid. It's just...
Yes.
You know, like you're that close to just melting everywhere. It's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's so graceful to me.
For the this is a reference that Matt will appreciate. It's Wildest Dreams.
Thank you.
Okay.
I love Wildest Dreams.
It's a Taylor Swift song. Okay. It's our shared,
she shows
it's our
clav.
Shared vocabulary.
Okay.
She understands.
But it's also a language. It's a languid song. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
It is a languid song. But it's I think one of the most active languid songs, certainly in the Taylor Swift canon, maybe in the pop music canon, as of in the last 20 years.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. In the last 20 years.
Yeah. That's kind
to
of
to be what... languid and also active and intentional. That's hard.
Yeah.
It's a tough line to walk.
It is. I feel like we're losing some of languidity. I don't know. Or we're calling it vibes. I don't know exactly.
That is the thing. So where do you stand on like the vibey music versus like music that hits? Where what's your deal?
Here's I like a bridge. So
same.
I mm-hmm. wouldn't mind if we brought back a bridge or two. You know what I mean? I think I wouldn't mind if there was more. There are some people, like some vocalists, where I'm just like, oh wow, you sound great. I'm gonna listen to what you've got. And then I'm like, did a song end? Like it just
bridgeless.
Yeah, there's nothing bridgeless. That's really kind of, you know, we're putting a lot on the vocalist to come up with the melody, and maybe that's not necessarily their thing, and we need to bring in someone who can steer. You know what I mean? Like sometimes it's just not it. I need a little structure. I need something to react against, and a bridge is a great way to like really rile up emotion.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so you would actually love Taylor. Do you like Taylor?
You know what? I've never really messed with her.
So try messing with her and just a little bit.
We understand.
Yeah.
Because she is a bridge queen.
Okay. All right.
Like, you can tell she loves, you can tell she loves writing them. And she's even said, you know, she's like, I love writing bridges.
Part.
She's a bridge first, bridge forward artist.
She loves the bridge.
Is it safe for me to move in with her lowercase album? Can I move in with lowercase records or should I start earlier?
The lowercase records are actually ones where she's being more experimental with the structure. She's doing what a lot of the new girls are doing, the new kids are doing, where they're erasing the bridges altogether or the songs are very loose and ambient.
Oh, okay.
Try 1989. That's great pop music. It throws back to the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. And it's very that Phil Collins thing. But she does big bridges. It's like epic
big bridges.
Pop.
And that, and I would also say Reputation.
Of course.
I think Shalewa would dig Reputation too.
Reputation goes hard.
A lot of great bridges.
And great bridges. But the thing I think nowadays is because the songs perform better on Spotify when they're shorter, they cut the bridges have gone away. In popular music today, right now, the bridges are absent because they like a lot of tracks and short songs, and that's what gets
so that it streams better, so that it, there's more, so that there's just more better streaming numbers.
Oh, that's a shame because I really do like a bridge. You know what I mean? It's just there's such a power in, you know, even if you're not doing a modulation, just at least give me a little bit of a switch. You know what I mean? It's they're fun. They're so much fun to sing in the shower, whether or not I can hit it. Like
Of course.
Oh, the bridge to Pieces of Me by Ashley Simp. Come on.
Okay. Wait a second.
Come on.
You did not just go there.
Yeah, come through with that. That is a beautiful. I love that.
How does it go again?
How do you know everything I'm about to say? Am I that obvious? And if it's written on my face, I hope it never goes away.
Great bridge. Yeah.
And then she gives you the chorus into the bigger chorus. It's that kind of pop song where it's like not really designed to be performed live. It's kind of meant to be performed live so everyone around you can sing it with you. It's that thing of relatable queen, hashtag can't really sing, but hashtag made of hooks.
Like, she just needed to nail it like that one time. And they were like, we will fix it in post. And then all you got to do is hold the mic out. From this point on, the audience will get it.
She may not have even made it through the whole, and also notice she's not, it's not, there's no vibrato on her.
Yeah,
I mean, she's just hitting us.
She's screaming.
It's so everyone in the audience who's a 13-year-old F-A-G-G-O-T and their girlfriends, a.k.a. me, who saw her twice live.
Oh, wow.
One pre-SNL fuck up, one post. I hung with her.
Oh, good for you.
Can be screaming it along while their eventual prom date is on their back, the girl that you are on the track team with. Shout out to Jessica Toomey. But yeah, that's the real truth.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great bridge, though.
It's a great pop song.
It is.
John Shanks and Cara Diaguardi were the writers.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Wow.
Yeah, that's culture. When Cara Diaguardi was hired as an American Idol judge, I knew her from writing that song.
Oh, that's so funny.
She was featured in the Ashley Simpson show.
I do remember that. Yeah, that was also, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed that. Although I thought it was odd that like, I was just like, well, I understand that you're old girl's sister. But I'm not sure.
I understand that your old girl's sister is a rule of culture. It's rule of culture number 39. Ashley Simpson.
Mr. Simpson.
I understand that your old girl's sister. ..
But I just, I was like, it's very ballsy of you to assume that we care enough that when you dye your hair black, that we're already. You know what I mean?
Right.
We didn't know what led to
that
the black.
That we respect you now.
Yeah, the black hair incident. And she's just like, I've dyed my hair black. So you know what that means. You got to take me seriously. And I was like, I mean, I guess. But this is like, episode two.
Yeah. I'm a rocker.
Yeah. So I, all right, fine. Wristbands, whatever, whatever it is we're doing. I guess that's all right.
Sure.
But I, sure. But then, you know, she belted out that song, which is the only way to sing it.
Mm-hmm. The only way.
The only way.
You know, the odds were a campy time too, but not in a way that was slanted towards, like, you know, like Iraq, Bush era mm-hmm. politics.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Iraq war was camp. That's what Bone was saying.
Iraq was camp.
It was.
Oh my God.
Honestly, that's though, you awful. Could never have told anyone during the aughts doing that they were camp. Like, honestly, mm-mm. like, looking no. back at seeing, like, the way Paris and Nicole are dressed in The Simple Life, like, it's so insane.
Yes.
They're wearing nothing.
But you couldn't tell anyone they weren't the coolest, chicest people in the world.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It was just so everywhere. That was a very rough time for clothing.
Yeah. Well, with the yeah. low rise.
That was.
We were all very, lost.
I mean, that was tough. And I was like early 30s, and I was like, I don't know what to do here. Like,
right, exactly. Like that possibility is slipping away from
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I don't. What do I do? Yeah, it was right. It was really hard. It was very. I was like, I guess. So I'm just maybe I'm homebound. Maybe I just maybe that's it. I guess we make frozen pizzas.
Yeah.
We make bootleg Midori sours at the house. We watch the OC. We write on LiveJournal.
I'll catch you on the next era. That's I'll catch it. You yeah. on the next fashion era.
Yeah. These are bound, you know, this is the kind of thing it switches every, these are bound to come up.
Yeah.
These ways are bound to, this can't be forever.
Truly. But weren't you saying, Bowen, like this generation, even like Gen Z now trying to do middle part, like we that doesn't mean we should be trying to do middle part. Like, let them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
let
right.
them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's fine to like it's like what Chile was saying. It's like I had the same reaction even as a kid growing up in that time being like, how do I fit into this? Because
right.
I don't. Because I'm not a Hollister kid. I'm not a surfer. I'm not like, what aesthetic am I trying to go for? I think it's fine to look from afar at what's going on, like fashion wise, and be like, I don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know. I think
it's like an understanding of something as being commercially popular, and that literally just means it's for quote unquote, it's pretty much for like whatever, like mainstream, like at that time, especially like a white audience that mm-hmm. was like watching yeah. Laguna Beach and being like, how do I be exactly that and nothing
right,
else?
Right,
and
right.
that was what youth culture was at the time, and now. Now I think it's like, you know, it doesn't seem so monolithic because there's not only one culture being shown back to
right
America.
A whole
yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. That's a huge help. that is a huge help when it comes time to go shopping for sure.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, you know yeah. I couldn't even watch Laguna Beach because they were all blondes.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell them apart, and I was like, I don't know what this is. Some sort of blonde blindness. I couldn't. It took them adding Audrina to the hills.
I was going to say diversify. Yeah.
yeah, and I was like, okay, now I get it. That one's that one, and this one works there. I literally needed a brunette in the mix, or else I was just like, I guess I'm not watching this show either. But
right,
yeah,
it's so between funny.
And the hills, even it was hard between Whitney and Heidi and Lauren.
It was. Like, then I had to like learn their personalities.
Yeah, well, Lauren, I think wore eyeliner. And I think that was like her thing. And Kristen Cavallari had like a bang.
Okay.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
That,
she, had like her,
right.
she had like that horrible, again, this is the early aughts. They had all the white girls had that one big bang that swooped to the side. You remember that? It was like an updo and like a one big huge yeah. bang to the side. Really bad. Like
good
an overgrown
stuff.
Bang.
Good stuff.
Comedy. Oh,
good stuff.
Good
comedy.
Stuff.
Good stuff.
Okay, so I think we are getting to the time of yes. I Don't Think So, Honey, aka the sort of high point
oh,
of every
no.
episode of Lost Culture, where we take 1 minute exactly to rant and rave against something in culture that, you know what? It needs to be discussed. If it's a negative light, sure. Maybe it'll be an illuminating light. It'll definitely make you think.
Usually negative.
It'll probably be negative.
Definitely
I mean, I don't have a good thing to say about mine.
Mm.
Hey guys, I am about to spoil what's happened thus far in the second season of The Circle. You might want to skip like 5 minutes and then you're probably going to be okay. But sorry about that. I just had to say what I thought about The Circle. Okay, so skip now.
Great. This is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey. And his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, the rules of the show, The Circle. Girl, the rules be changing every single episode.
Wow.
Why are the flops that were voted out, Jack playing Emily and Lisa playing Lance Bass, so badly? Why are they still eligible to win? They were blocked. And then you had Kat and Mitchell blocked, aka the eye candy is G-O-N-E, and yet they're gone? Like, come on. Also, I don't think so, honey, that the gays are the villains this season.
Yeah.
Lee as River and Courtney, I'm sorry, I cannot be rooting for you because you guys were the reason why my queen, Teralisha, is not there anymore. And Teralisha did not get the credit. If you want to know whose team I'm on right now, it is Delisa all the way. And I know my sister has my back. Trevor, Delisa, Trevor, all the way. And if they have some fuckery go down that fucks her over, I'm going to be pissed because I don't think so, honey. I don't trust the rules. Let the rules be simple. No twists. I don't think so, honey.
And that's 1 minute. We will bring on Michelle Buteau herself to address this.
And I will have to... Netflix is making me drag the show that our friend hosts, and I don't like doing it. But all I'm saying is, if you're blocked, you're blocked.
You're blocked.
I don't like any reality show that brings back eliminated people and then just, they're back. They don't even earn it. They didn't even earn it. Lisa had the gall to be I'm playing as Lance Bass. And when they asked her reasoning for why Lance Bass was playing, and she said to do an NSYNC reunion tour, which was the worst answer she could have ever done, Jack fucked up because his makeup was terrible on that mannequin. Why are they both still in? Why are they still in?
Shalee, why are you watching The Circle?
I'm not, but I will.
I think you would love it. I think you would really dig it.
I'm gonna
this season. The finale's on Wednesday.
Oh, perfect.
But I binged. I'm not a binge person. Mm-hmm. I did the whole thing in 5 days. I was like, this is phenomenal television.
Okay. Yeah, I absolutely will.
Maybe I'll record a little thing at the end, which is a spoiler alert for everyone that hasn't been watching. But to me, it's just like, sometimes I get so frustrated because it's you see who is playing the best game and then they throw a twist in there, like Courtney being the Joker. What the fuck was that?
Teralisha was playing the best game.
Love Teralisha.
Delisa's playing the best game right now. Courtney and Lee are just like, okay, so there's a catfish. There's like a guy in his 50s, maybe early 60s, we'll say. Mm-hmm. Gay guy who's playing like a gay...
Hippie guy.
But I don't think he's catfishing him that well. He's getting phrases wrong, like youth-y phrases.
He's literally
wrong.
Flying under the radar so in ways that are insane. I'm like, I'm sorry, but if I were to really think about it, if everyone just slows down for a second, it's obvious that Lee as River is a catfish. And to be honest with you, sometimes Delisa slips up as well because she gets a little feminine with the way she talks as Trevor, just a touch.
She gets away with it because she's like, I'm a dad.
Yes. Yes. And okay. Also, it's, I think Teralisha might have fucked up a little bit too in the pictures she decided to show of herself in the second round because she was using these very filtered pictures that made her look like a little bit like a catfish. And I was just like, it's so interesting when people decide to play as themselves and they seem like catfishes. That is such an interesting comment on how people view themselves on social.
There's a gap between your self-perception and your,
Before we go to yours, Bowen, I want to know if you went on the you, I think, would have to play as someone else. You could not play as Bowen Yang.
Not necessarily. I could play as myself and just be like...
I think they would know who you are.
I would be like, I'm here to play. It's like Chloe. Like, so this girl from Too Hot to Handle...
I ride hard for Chloe, too.
Yeah, Chloe's great. So this girl from Too Hot to Handle is now on the Circle of the season. And some of the contestants are like, oh my God, you're that girl from Too Hot to Handle.
Mm-hmm. And she's it's me.
I don't think it's adversely affected her.
Right.
I think I would play as a hot girl summer. I would play as like, I just think, because this is
a hot
my
girl
fear.
Named Summer.
Named Summer.
Yeah.
Summer LaCroix. That would be my character. Summer LaCroix.
That's not a catfish name at all.
No, not at all.
Summer LaCroix.
That's very believable.
And all my pictures are all my pictures are of Greta. but basically, I am not confident enough in my own ability to get myself across on social media without like engaging in weird, like try-hardy things for social. I think I would feel more confident as a catfish character. I think I could remain more consistent as a character than I could as myself, honestly. And I think it'd be more likable too if I were not myself. That's crazy. Is this therapy?
I think the producers tell these contestants ahead of time because to speak a certain way over the circle, because I mean, surely all these messages that they're sending to each other through this like virtual,
it's not how people talk on
dictation.
Social.
It's not how people talk at all. It's like message. Hey, queen, love the way you played the game today. I just wanted to tell you that when I was a child, I was touched by a relative.
Heart emoji.
Blue heart emoji. Hashtag got your back. Hashtag what
wild.
Gets the goose gets
hashtag
the gander.
Like, sisters who were touched.
So it's just chaos.
It's pure chaos. It's not normal communication styles at all.
Okay.
It's
like, and the hashtags are like not real hashtags. It literally is like hashtag both born on the 4th of July. It's like, it's so stupid. It's really insane. No one's ever said hashtag concrete angel. Like, I don't know what the hell that means, queen.
Queen. Anyway, and yes, these two gay men, one's that guy in his 60s we mentioned, and then the other is this like is this Barb gay dude who loves Nicki Minaj and Taylor Swift equally, which is a conflict of interest, but we'll
that's
let
a roller coaster number 51. Loving Nicki Minaj and Taylor Swift equally is a conflict of interest. But here's the thing, Bowen, that's us. Courtney, I think I would love in real life on the circle.
Oh yeah,
not rooting
circle,
for the girl
villain,
not rooting
villain.
For not rooting for this gay.
Would love to twirl with Courtney at like a bar or like a, you know,
100%
dance floor,
best of friends. See, and the reason is I could not play as myself because I know I would be Courtney. I would be Courtney. I know I'd be just evil. I'd have to play as someone else. Anyway.
Okay.
Loving the circle.
Thank you for giving us a space to discuss
absolutely.
This. Surely you would love it.
Yeah.
I'm
totally going to give this a shot now.
Give her a shot.
Start with season 2.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So start with season 2. Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah.
I fell off like 3 episodes into 1. I was like, this isn't for me. But 2, I was hooked from the beginning.
Okay. Maybe you'll like season 1 better now because you can see really the origins.
Yeah.
yes. And can't wait for the finale because this is, of course, it's Michelle's moment to shine because she hosts the reunion in the finale. And she's really, it's really a voiceover gig for her all year. And then she really comes hard in the finale. You understand? All right. So Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. Time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Your building's not wired for Verizon Fios.
Oh, girl.
Bitch, now I have to settle for middle-tier Spectrum internet speeds.
You heard him right.
That are going to nosedive 3 months into my contract with them. And they'll say, oh, it's not a contract. You can do month to month. I don't care. Give me the fast stuff. Mainline the Ethernet to my devices. And now I got to put it upstairs because my building's not wired for Spectrum that optimally either.
30 seconds.
You're not gonna perform building surgery on my apartment in order for me to get a fast Wi-Fi connection, and the internet should be fast and free for everybody.
Like water.
Like water. Deprivatized Wi-Fi, deprivatized internet. I don't want Sal from Flushing to come in and make me wait 45 minutes so that he can like look at my building's guts with binoculars in my laundry room. It's actually very vulnerable.
And that's 1 minute.
Can we say?
And this is just the truth.
Right.
And I'm sorry to have to be the bearer of bad news to this wireless internet company, but Spectrum, you don't hold a candle to Verizon Fios. You just don't. Have you ever fucked with Spectrum?
I have not, but I grew up in a Comcast situation. Like, I am coming from a Comcast. So that's the same. They once sent a guy to wire something in my house and he had a nameplate belt buckle.
A what belt buckle?
His name was
what?
nameplate belt buckle, and it was Mark, and it also was like kind of neonish around it. So the Mark was like in, you know, metal, but then there was like neon LED lights around it, and he was just standing in my living room, just kind of like, this is nice. This is a nice place you got here. This is real nice. And I'm like, yeah, Mark, I'm going to need you to do your thing and go.
Do your job. Please. And GTFO, as they say. Yeah,
please.
Bowen, when you said that your building was not fitted for Verizon Fios, my heart broke for you. As someone who also is in a building that is not fitted for Verizon Fios, I just, Spectrum is so not it.
But I actually don't know who is to blame, because we love Spectrum for giving us the access. Mm-hmm. For not getting us to ask the question, will my building be wired for it? Do we direct the ire towards Verizon for having it be like masonry specific or whatever?
Yeah,
the fuck,
that is know? Weird. Just
I guess you're right. They're problematic, but it's unfortunate because they're so goddamn good.
They're so goddamn
good. I never had internet like that before in my life.
I'll never have it again.
Never.
Never. Okay.
All right. So listen up. This is the point in the show where Shalewa does her fucking thing. And her thing, at least this episode, is going to be, I don't think so, honey. Shalewa, are you ready?
I am ready.
I knew it. All right, ready. This is Shalewa Sharp's I Don't Think So, Honey. Her time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Paramount Plus streaming site logo. It's so lazy. It's so, look, you're the last one out, okay? So you seeing what everybody else is doing, right? You see what we're doing now? It's just the most simple blue with the mountain and the stars.
Yes.
Yeah, we know it. We've known it all this time. You're not going to zhuzh it up for us at all. Hulu's got a nice little green that's
seconds.
Been changing colors a little bit.
Yeah.
Disney, yeah. I mean, there's blue as well, but it's gradiated, you know, and also
it's gorgeous.
And yeah. They're Disney. All they need is that big ass D and you got it.
You know,
Netflix was a big 15. Red N, but now it's a multicolor. Come on. HBO is doing queer coloring. Like, it's doing queer, and you're just going to come in here with this boot. Like, it looks like letterhead. It looks like letterhead. You didn't even try. Thank you for all the real worlds, though.
And that's 1 minute. I will say this. For a streaming service that actually kind of comes through in terms of the content, the logo, it's a little bit basic.
It's very, it's like they didn't even think about it. They're like, just give them what we normally got. We got to do more. You got to do better.
Gotta do better.
You're so right. And it is important that they're the last ones out.
Yeah. They're seeing what everyone else is doing, and they still gave us just milk toast.
And you know, especially after HBO Max did the thing. When that blue screen comes up and it sees HBO Max and it goes, and then you have to get that sound, you feel like you've unlocked something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh my God.
Like you're entering the domain. You get why design and aesthetic and that sonic moment of welcome to HBO Max is important.
Yeah, and all of the other ones just seem like they're alive slightly because they're messing with their colors, and that's what the kids are doing now. We've got these lights. There's so much going on, and it literally looks like Paramount Plus just looks like a piece of paper that we've all
agreed.
It's very flat. It truly just looks like a scan. Like if they had just the light that came from a copier, where if you're looking at a copier and that white light went across, it would make sense to me. But it would also be a little more dynamic than what they've got going on right now.
Textured.
Yes.
Absolutely. And Matt, Shalewa will be too kind to correct you. I will correct you. But Matt is classically colorblind. HBO Max, guess what the color is?
Purple.
It's purple.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, and that's how you know I'm real. I'm
no,
real.
No one.
But the thing
I'm real.
It's clearly like bluish and pink, like it's not just full on just purple.
Shalewa, you don't have to do that.
No,
it's
but it
purple
is.
And I can't see it.
No, it's okay.
I don't have to do that. And I have a show on it, And I literally, no one's ever.
But I was going to say, I don't think it's one of the people who haven't told you that it's not blue, who have not corrected you.
I've kind of really been sitting around here in the quarantine myself, you see. And you know, you understand, there's really not really been anyone there where I've been like, when that pops up, I'm like, that's blue. And they're like, no, sis.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely purple, but it's not as blue as the Paramount Plus logo makes me feel.
And also, they have so much to work with, because correct me if I'm wrong, but the Paramount Plus is Miss Thing holding up the torch?
That's Columbia. Yeah, that's talking about the mountain and the stars.
Okay, so you think like they can't do something with the mountain and the stars, like have the stars go around the mountain?
That's
like,
what
create,
normally
like, a cool...
they would do when they're opening a movie. When it's opening a movie, they have the stars, and then they it's nothing. It's just boop, here you go. Sign here, and here is your here are your selections. So
bust down Floppiana. Not
flop.
It.
Yeah. Flop behavior.
Yeah.
Flop so, behavior. It makes, jester flop logo.
It makes
That's
me sad because they were, you know, they're giving us real worlds again, and I've been enjoying that. And you know, where else are you going to see Latifah as the Equalizer? You know what I mean? Like, they're giving us choices. But
yeah. So wait, have you checked in with Latifah as the Equalizer?
Not yet. Not
right,
yet.
Right, but you plan to?
I do.
I do love Dana Owens.
I'm a fan of hers. I think she's done exceptional work all the way through her career. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's been acknowledged enough. I mean, honestly,
it certainly hasn't. No,
like her comedy chops in Living Single, bar none. Amazing. Right. Amazing.
Musical theater.
Yes.
Comedy.
Yes.
Drama. Oscar nominated, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
For Chicago. Also, you know what's interesting? Like, doesn't get the credit for being a full-on movie star above the title movie star. People forget she has opened big movies for a long time, and this show is a huge hit. And only a big star can like just instantly make a show huge like that. But the reason why all these things are popping off is because Latifah is a superstar.
Yep.
And you're so right. She doesn't get that. She doesn't get that. Those flowers.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't get her flowers. Also, her hair always laid. Always,
you know,
laid.
And she's kind of doing something a little different in The Equalizer.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think she just has a good face for any like bone structure, for any length, any style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that's also what we're working with.
I think so.
I met her one time when I was 18 years old, and she had a platinum blonde it was like a cascade happening. It was like a short platinum blonde wig, and she glows in person.
I believe
it is crazy. I mean, I interviewed her. I was like for the NYU newspaper for A Secret Life of Bees.
I love this story.
And so basically, it was my first time ever interviewing a bunch of celebrities. And like, it was like Gina Prince Bythewood, who directed the movie, who mm-hmm. I love and Basketball. I really love all of her work.
Right.
And I was excited to see her, but was nervous to ask a question. Sophie Okonedo came in and she sat down. And I was like, I'm going to ask a question to Sophie Okonedo. Like, I'm going to ask a question. And she had a role in the movie that, like, was going to earn some Oscar buzz, we thought, maybe. And someone said something about the Oscars because, you know, she had been nominated for Hotel Rwanda and she was getting some buzz. And I remember asking, like, I just jumped in there because they said, like, if you have a question, jump in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I jumped in there. I was like, well, does it make you nervous to get Oscar buzz? Like, do you think about it? And she looks at me in the eyes, and Sophie Okonedo was like, oh, no, I don't think about that at all. That's in God's plan. That's in God's plan. And I was like, oh, okay. And this woman across the table from me was like, now, did you want to resume the question that you were answering before he interrupted you? And I was like, oh, my God, I'm mortified. I'm 18 years old.
No.
I was trying to do my best. I respected her, and I felt like I had like disrespected her. And I was like, oh no. So I'm dispirited. So
right.
Then Queen Latifah comes in, lifts the energy off mm-hmm. the ground into the stratosphere. Superstar. Mm-hmm. Charm down. She comes in, sits down. And I'm not asking her a question because I'm just having too much fun watching her. And I felt like a flop after Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
So we all have our opportunity to get our like press book signed by Queen Latifah at the end. And everyone, I can tell, is a fake fan because they're all going up to her and they're like, I loved you in Chicago. I loved you in Chicago. I loved you in Chicago. Like all these press people right. that clearly did not know Latifah's work. Did they? And she literally was like, thank you. Thanks. Thank you so much. Thanks. Because she just gets that all the time. You could tell these film people like only know Chicago. So I was like, I'm going to earn this woman's respect. So I went up to her and I gave her my book and I looked down and I said, I loved you in Life Support, which was her HBO right. like AIDS TV movie.
Yeah.
She looks up at me. She looks dead in her eyes. She wipes her platinum blonde hair out of her face and she goes, thank you so much, baby. And I said, thank you. Mm. And we had a moment together and she signed that book and I left and it was like that Sophie Okonedo moment didn't even happen. And that was God's plan. That was God's plan that day.
Reader, if you're not getting out of your chair, I don't care if you're driving, if you're not getting out of your seat,
park the car.
That's beautiful. Tear to my eye. Tear to my eye.
Latifah made my day. I hope I made hers.
I'm sure you did. I think you did.
Wow.
This episode made my day.
Hello.
So much fun.
Hello.
So much fun. And to hear what probably is going to be 10 million times even more fun, you got to listen to The War Report, which episodes every Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have, duh. It's like, how long has the podcast been going?
About like 5 months or so. Yeah.
It's a baby.
Yeah, it's a baby. So it's a
little nascent stage podcast.
Yeah, it's me and Gastor Almonte, who's a great storyteller.
Incredible.
And he's a delightful Brooklyn-born, married, father of two, like just tough guy. And I am not any of those things. And so it's just us, you know, talking crap about the news basically every week. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
We're in.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh, we're in. We're all in. And you got to follow Shalewa on all platforms at Silky Jumbo.
Yeah.
Which, come on. That's come on. That's a handle. That's a handle and a half.
That is memorable name.
Yeah, yeah. I like lotion. I like eating and I like lotion. What can I say?
What can I say?
We're so happy you were here. Thank you so much.
I'm thrilled to do it. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh.
Matt, well, I close out every episode with a song. I think I have one in mind.
Here we go.
Well, the cruel summer,
cloudy day, clouds away. Seems like I can finally rest my head on something real. I like the way that feels. So this was sort of a mega mix.
Yeah, I'm really shocked at how that really spoke to so many parts of my soul.
Lost Culture, touching all of the soul.
All parts of
the
soul.
All the soul. The dark parts of your soul. Bye.